Welcome to Off Trail Learning. This is Blake Bowles. This is the third of three episodes about going back to school after being raised unschooled. And today I talk with Kevin, who grew up unschooled in Alaska, which is a pretty unique place to be unschooled and or just educated in general. You're pretty far out there. And so we talk about the nuances of pretty rural life and unschooling far away from major urban centers. And then we get into a discussion of travel, because Kevin is a full-time world traveler right now. And so we'll hear about that and his thoughts about college and what public high school is good for and what it's not so good for. All right, here's Kevin. My guest today is Kevin Snavely, a 23-year-old grown unschooler and high school student who is from Alaska, but is currently living in LA, but is Skyping me from Bangkok, Thailand. And Kevin also goes by Kevin Cole online, in case you want to Google stalk him. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, thank you, Blake.
It's 7 p.m. here on the West Coast. What time is it there?
It is 9 in the morning.
Well, bright and early. Isn't that funny? Bright and early, and yeah. Getting a little sleepy for me over here. All right, so we are talking about going back to school after being raised as a homeschooler or unschooler. And go ahead and launch into your story. How were you raised and educated, Kevin?
My story. Okay. So I was born and raised in Alaska. And so I don't know if a lot of people know this, but up there, there's very lax homeschooling laws. So a lot of people do homeschool in varying degrees. Some people do the more traditional schooling at home through a curriculum. Some people are, more on the unschooling side of things. My parents kind of fell somewhere in the middle of that at first, trying to find that she didn't really, actually at the time she hadn't heard of unschooling. So she just knew that she wanted to homeschool. And at some point, my aunt Ren Allen, who's also been, kind of a fairly big figure, I guess, in the unschooling community, had discovered it and kind of passed it along to my mom, who loved the idea. So after she kind of learned of it, I can't remember exactly what age I was. Maybe I want to say around 7 or so. That from there, kind of like it took off, or we took off from there, and yeah, I guess we just.
Then you're unschoolers.
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
What did that look like for you as an unschooler after age 7?
Yeah. So for us, it was just obviously self-guided learning. We did a lot of stuff where obviously you want to learn about a subject or whatever it is, whatever your interest is. I remember doing a lot of like science experiments with things. My mom, we were through, even, I think when she had made the jump to unschooling, I think we still had a program at some point. And in Alaska, I'm not actually sure if it's the same in other states, but in Alaska, if you are signed up through a program, you get a couple thousand dollar, they call it like an allotment. That the state will basically give you to purchase materials or whatever.
So even though your family was unschooling, you kind of jumped through a few of the state hoops because there was some free money attached at the end of the rainbow.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think a lot of families do that.
Yeah. So yeah, we did that for a little bit. I don't think it was too long after she decided to stop doing curriculum-based stuff, and even when we were doing curriculum-based stuff, it was never very, it wasn't very stringent. I think the most, like, coercive that my parents ever got with, at least my, like, education was probably learning to read, and even that wasn't very forced, because I really love to read, and I learned, for me, fairly easily, so. Mm-hmm. So we did that.
What were some of the highlights during this period before you started thinking about going back to school?
Yeah, highlights. Definitely just having the freedom and autonomy every day to kind of follow your own path and just Yeah, I spent a lot of time, at least at some point when I got to a certain age, on the internet, and that's given me, like, just having that freedom to explore, and not, I don't know, not be tied, not be forced into doing a typical day that you would at school, just doing busy work or things that you would otherwise be uninterested in. I mean, it just gave me a lot of time to, I guess, explore. And I learned how to write basically through online games, I would say, which is, it's an interesting thing because there's a lot of criticism about giving children too much time on the internet and, you know, what consequences mm-hmm. that might have and all of that. And I was pretty much given unlimited like freedom to be on my computer. So I would say that I learned how to write through talking to people on the internet, through playing uh-huh. games. I learned base levels of some different coding. I remember at one time I was really into this game and I set up my own server for it. And even though things like that didn't necessarily lead to a career in coding, or tech, I decided that wasn't really where I wanted to go. Just having those experiences and being able to dive in to something wholeheartedly and give my full attention to it, I think was really beneficial and has kind of set the stage for how I dive into things as an adult. Mm-hmm. I try to give everything my full attention if it's an interest that I have. So mm-hmm. yeah, so aside from that, one of the really big highlights, other than just having the freedom to explore and without pressure, was probably when my family decided to take a 7-month RV trip around the United States. That kind of started, I remember my parents talked about this from a very young age, about my dad quitting his job and hopping in a motorhome and traveling around the country. So eventually it took until I was about 13, and they sold their house. My dad quit his job. We bought a motorhome. We lived in it for about a month before we left. And then in December, I think it was 2006, we left and drove down through Canada into the U.S. And we spent 7 months just traveling around, seeing as many states as possible. And the goal was kind of that we were leaving in Alaska because my mom has absolutely hated living there most of her life.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where she just kind of got stuck through different family things and my dad's job and this and that. So the goal was that we were going to leave and move and, you know, kind of throughout the trip and all the states we were visiting, finding a new place to move. And about halfway through, I would say they hadn't really found that place yet. And 7 months in a motorhome was proving to be difficult for not everyone, but just, you know, being in that temporary space when, you know, you don't know where you're going or what's going on. Like some of my siblings had a hard time. And so
that's very understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was great. Like, we were still having an amazing trip. But so they kind of decided, like, we need to figure out what we're doing. So they made the choice to, after we were done traveling, that we were going to go back to Alaska. Back to the snow. Yeah, back to the north.
And how old were you then at the end of that road trip?
I was still 13. I turned 14 about, I think, a month or a couple months, month or two after we got back.
And when did you start feeling like going back to school might be the right thing for you?
So that was probably, my birthday fell in a way. I think I was probably about 14. Because I turned 15 in the beginning of my freshman year. So it was probably actually that next, January that I had started considering it after mm-hmm. we got back.
And you had enjoyed all this freedom to explore, to do your own thing, to dive deep into your interests. You got to go on this super long road trip with your family. Mm-hmm. What was it that made you, you know, start thinking that you should give this up or you should exchange this for something else?
Yeah, absolutely. So So one thing I mentioned earlier about Alaska is that there's a lot of homeschoolers, but there isn't a lot of unschoolers there. Even if technically you could kind of throw them in that kind of lump. A lot of the people that homeschool in Alaska is for sort of religious reasons or more of kind of I would interpret it as like a sheltering mentality. And I don't want to say everyone because there's a ton of like really cool people that we met and you know that kind of were doing it for the same reasons we were, which was not to shut out the world, but you know obviously to bring more of the world and like a deeper experience. You know, out of life. So a lot of my friends, because of that were schooled, just because it wasn't as other kids who were in my situation weren't as accessible as they are, you know, in the lower 48 states. So
is that your way of saying that there weren't enough other kids around?
There were, but I mean, just my experience, like going to the unschooling conventions and like, a lot of those kids saw each other like a lot more regularly than I did, you know, and I would get to see people when we were at the conferences or, when we happened to be traveling. But other than that, I was pretty much cut off from the community, I guess you could say.
So the community of unschoolers or unschool friendly type people was just not very rich up in Alaska compared to what you saw down in the contiguous 48 states.
Absolutely, yeah, for okay. sure.
So a lot did of you my, get a little bit of contiguous U.S. jealousy?
I did, like, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh man, they've got it made down there.
Uh huh. And that was something else. Like I really wanted to go back to Alaska at that time, and then sort of like building into my teenage years, I realized I didn't want to be there at all. But you know, it's one of those things. So a lot of my friends were schooled traditionally. So it was kind of this combination of I had only really ever known life outside of school, and a lot of my friends were in school. So it was kind of this thing where I kind of wanted this shared experience and to kind of know what was going on. And then the fact that I felt that it was probably my last opportunity to gain that point of reference, which I'm someone who just likes to experience as much as I possibly can. And I really wanted to understand because I, you know, you grow up and it doesn't like you hear things or, you know, people that are going to school or kind of actually can apply to anything. But it's sort of hard to understand or know, you know, everything if you haven't experienced it yourself. And so I really wanted to just be informed and have that comparison between most of my life growing up and then this kind of an enigmatic thing that I knew was there, but I you know had no like frame of reference for.
School, the great mystery.
Exactly. Yeah.
The black box.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you probably did know a lot about it through just media and culture.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so, definitely.
But you still felt like this was something that you had to experience. You couldn't just kind of keep going for the next 4 years feeling kind of lonely and just never giving it a shot. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. I just really wanted to – and I kind of like I felt – fairly strongly about the way that my parents chose to raise me, and I didn't feel like I was necessarily missing out on anything just because we'd done so much, and I really enjoyed, you know, the freedom that I had. But yeah, it was also just I wanted to be able to kind of know definitively was the way I grew up the best for me. I don't know, did I have a better experience than I would have otherwise in a traditionally schooled environment? And then just kind of like things that seem mundane, but like some curiosity that I had was like, I kind of had this perception a little bit that school was more like a certain amount of rigor or difficulty, or you learned a certain, like, I don't know, kind of
like that's where real learning happens.
Yeah, not even real learning, but just that, like, there's this, like, large body of information that you're going to consume, and, you know, it's kind of like what everyone else has, and, like, that maybe that I wasn't getting the whole breadth of it, like, outside of that setting, and,
Yeah.
I wanted to test the waters.
And then the waters you did.
I did, yeah. And then also something else that kind of compelled me was I had a friend who was one grade ahead of me, and we had a Japanese program at my high school, and so she had gone off to high school and taken Japanese, and she went to Japan after her freshman year. So I had always been really interested in Japan, and I wanted to learn Japanese, so that was a pulling factor. And then also I was a swimmer, lifelong swimmer growing up, and I had taken kind of a like indefinite break after we moved from my hometown to Wasilla, Alaska, where I spent the second half of my life. So I wanted to get back into swimming, and I thought swimming for the high school would be a lot of fun.
Okay, so Japanese and swim team sound mm-hmm. like opportunities that would be pretty challenging to find outside of the high school environment up in Alaska. Is that right?
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt, yeah.
Like, you could always self-teach Japanese, but I mean, I know through language learning experience that classes are pretty special and unique, and mm-hmm. and that I personally hit a wall when I tried to self-teach language that only a real-life teacher can help me bust through.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what were your expectations or fears going back into school? Did you have any fears about, like, not, you know, having gaps in your academic background? Did you have any social anxieties about going, you know, being thrust into the meat grinder of public high school?
Yeah, of course. I think, especially when you haven't been directly exposed to something, you can, I don't know, you make up a lot of inaccuracies just in your head about things and how it's going to be. Which is why, like, I personally think it's so important to just experience, you know, as much as possible. Because a lot of the things that we think or the worries that we have are entirely made up, and they never really manifest themselves. So I would say I definitely felt a certain level of, maybe I would be inadequate in that environment, just because, not because I wasn't intelligent or because I, you know, whatever reason, but just that I didn't have the whole, you know, however many 7, 8, 9 years of experience before that. I would say that was probably my biggest misconception about it, was just the whole, like, learning environment. And, you know, I assumed people put in all this work and so much time and dedication, and they, you know, they were, I don't know, like, kind of, yeah, like,
what did you discover instead?
So I just remember going in and just being so shocked at how, I mean, for lack of a better word, like lazy everyone was, and how, like, people could actively just be in class, like, blowing it off and seemingly, like, just kind of getting away with it. Because my whole perception of it was that, you know, you're coerced, you're sort of forced into this environment, and then you kind of just have to do it. And then I saw, like, people just completely blowing it off and essentially spending 6 hours in a building, which isn't ideal anyway, but my whole thing was that, like, if I'm going to be there, I'm going to play the game. So just people being there, trying to get away with doing absolutely nothing. And it was just, like, I guess really surprising to me just to see that, because I had this whole sort of, like, little story built up in my head about how schools were and what it was going to be like. And so that was probably the biggest one, just realizing that I could show up with almost no formal experience in any classroom setting, no formal progression in my knowledge, or, you know, almost no formal testing, and I could walk into this environment that was completely foreign to me and excel instantly. And I love that line. Yeah, and it was just, I don't know, I was really surprised by it, because I thought there would have to, I don't know, I thought I would have to adjust to it, and it was just like, this is it? Like, this is what people are doing for, you know, 12, 13 years? Like, this is, yeah, I don't know, it was surprising, yeah.
And what about the social environment? Did you find it easy to make friends? It sounds like you already had some friends going in there. How did that work out for you, being the weird homeschooled kid coming in after so many years of not being in school?
Yeah. I think I did have some friends, for sure. I had friends from when we first moved to Wasilla. I had some, like, neighborhood friends, and through one of them, I met one of my really good friends, Sarah, and she was the one who went to Japan, and she was already there, so I had her. So there's a few people scattered around, but I was also a year behind. So I kind of went in, and it was a little strange, because I would hang out with her and kind of the group that she'd established. And I had a couple friends my age, but that was a really good, like, exercise in kind of forging my own group. So I'd say I spent kind of the first year, not really breaking out and, like, forging my own relationships strongly in my own kind of groups. So I'm sorry, I think I'm straying a little bit. But yeah, I guess social anxiety. So I definitely kind of had a little bit of anxiety, because I didn't know with someone who's a year older and, like, in different classes and doing different things, you mm-hmm. never know, like, how much time you're going to be able to spend with them. So I definitely didn't know, like, how that was going to be for me. And I remember for the first little bit, I had a lunch, our lunches were staggered, and I would have lunches that nobody I knew was at. So that was always, like, a weird adjustment, trying to figure out how to spend your time when you know nobody for, you know, 40 minutes or however long it is. So I remember, like, doing a lot of pacing for the first little bit and just trying to, like, figure out, like, what am I doing here? And yeah, so the first year is definitely a little bit of an adjustment. I think just getting used to that kind of environment, that social environment where you're with all these people all day long. But most of them you're not really actually friends with, even though you're interacting with them on a daily basis.
Yes, it is such a weird thing.
Yeah.
When we talk about it in the abstract here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you adjust to it? Did you, you know, come to thrive in the high school? And it sounds like the academic challenge was not major for you.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I pretty much walked in, and I already knew that I was pretty good at English, so I had... I walked straight into an honors English class, and that was, I loved that class, actually. I really loved it. Just the amount of discussion we had. And that was kind of like the environment, or the part of school that I really enjoyed, was the collaborative, I guess, like, class discussions where we would read a book. One of my favorite units we did was on the Holocaust, and just having... I had a really great teacher, and she just facilitated discussions, like, almost daily, but definitely probably half of our classes, you know, were just huge discussions. And that's where I found I learned the most, was just through, you know, expressing opinions about a specific body of work or whatever it was, and just going back and forth with other students. And then, my teacher, Mrs. Broder, she would interject, you know, her knowledge of, you know, so it was just like a very kind of fun and open class. And those are the times where I was really like, all right, this is pretty cool. Because, you know, you don't have a lot of, you discuss things with your family or whatever in like an unschooled environment. But the one thing that is sometimes lacking is you don't necessarily have that like giant collaborative learning opportunity.
The hive mind,
right?
With
right.
Hopefully one or more really knowledgeable people to help like push the discussion forward when you start going in circles.
Yeah, absolutely. And just hearing other people's like thoughts and ideas and kind of just being exposed to all of that is really formative, I think.
That's one thing. It sounds like you would have had trouble replacing. If you did not go to school,
definitely.
If you continued to be unschooled.
Yeah.
I'm curious what else you think you got out of the high school experience that would have been very difficult to replace or to try to fabricate as an unschooler in those same years.
So I think difficult to replace. I definitely think as far as where I lived, just being Alaska – It's really strange because the things are, you have to drive everywhere, of course. It's freezing cold. It doesn't really, it's not the most warm, I mean, metaphorically warm place to be. People are kind of closed off. and they kind of do their own thing. So it's sort of hard to create, in my opinion, like strong community there. And there is a strong community in certain ways, but just the spaces where people come together are hard to come by. And so given the fact that I was also unschooled and there weren't very many kids in my same position, my social life would have suffered more. And I think while that wasn't a huge problem as a child, because you play with the neighbor kids, you have your friends that you play with after, I don't know, whatever. Like it's
a little bit more focused on like your parents and your siblings.
Right, right. And it's easier to, to just meet people to play with than it is when you start developing more intimate, what's the word I'm looking for? Like more profound relationships.
Adult level, like complex relationships.
Yeah, for sure. So I think going into my teenage years, if I wouldn't have had that exposure to people and kind of, just finding my tribe, I guess, it would have been a little, I probably, it would have been more difficult to do that outside of that environment.
Mm-hmm. And you got a chance to study Japanese and actually travel to Japan, right?
I did, yeah. So our school was actually really cool. They did... I think we had four languages. I believe it was like Spanish, Japanese, French, and Russian. And every year, one of the language programs did a trip to a country that represented their language and kind of what they were studying. So I studied for 3 years, and we went the summer after my junior year of high school. And that trip was incredible. My Japanese teacher was this really cool lady, named Carla, and she, one of the best teachers I ever had. She was just so, very open-minded, she gave us a lot of, I guess autonomy, like in our own learning journeys. And so she was just very trusting. She wasn't like this, overbearing force that I found a lot of teachers to be, kind of like holding your hand and looking over your shoulder. Our trip to Japan was so great. It was her and her boyfriend at the time, who kind of subbed in last minute because one of our other chaperones couldn't make it, and he was just this funny guy. So there was 18 of us and two of them, which seems like not a lot of like oversight, but she went through a long process of interviewing us to go on the trip. So we kind of had to apply and like make a sort of application profile, and then she would sort of select us from a pool of everyone in the program. So we had a lot of freedom on that trip where, you know, we would be in a city, and Japan's very safe, so you don't have a lot of the same concerns that you do traveling to other parts of the world. So if we, you know, we'd be in Kyoto for a day, and, you know, so you have 6 hours, go have fun, you know, be back here at this time. So we'd group, you know, we'd break off in groups and go explore the city for 6 hours.
I am a big fan of that style of trip leading, let me tell you.
Yeah, and yeah, you've done a lot of that. So yeah, it was just, it was fantastic. And Japan is such a, it's, I don't know how I feel going back now, but at the time it felt very surreal. Like, and I hadn't done, that was my first international trip too. So yeah, it was just amazing. I had such a great time from start to finish.
So it sounds like your high school experience was pretty overwhelmingly positive. Like you had enough good teachers and classes that it kept you intellectually stimulated. You had good extracurricular opportunities like swimming or learning a foreign language and getting to actually travel.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, maybe after a rough first year, your social scene panned out and you had a good group of friends and a good network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say that's the case.
Is there anything you felt you were missing out on by not being in school during those years? Anything you felt restricted by your choice to go back to school?
I would say so in certain areas for sure. I definitely missed, I missed the time that I had for sure. You know, you don't really realize how, you don't really, I guess I didn't realize, how fantastic that was, just the, you know, the amount of time I had just to dedicate to what, you know, whatever I was interested in or whatever I wanted to do. Until you have it like sort of taken away and you're like, all right, well, I'm here for 6 hours. Then I'm going to go to swim practice. And then, you know, at 16, I got a job as a lifeguard. So then I'm going to go to work, and suddenly your entire day is filled with, you know, obligation. So, and yeah, and then I started, while I would agree with you of your, you know, that my experience was, the majority of it was positive. It was definitely, you know, I had a lot of, realizations of how much time is like wasted in that setting where you're in a building for 6 hours, and you're trying to cram in 6 classes, and in those 6 classes, the teachers are trying to wrangle a group of kids, the majority of which don't want to be doing anything or don't want to be there. So they're trying to blow it off as much as they can. So like, just a lot of the time I felt was spent, you know, sitting there waiting, or, you know, if we were doing something, a lot of the work felt just like busy work. Like we're doing this to fill this specific amount of time, instead of actually like, I don't know, like learning. and so those moments where, you know, I had those classes where it was really collaborative, a lot of discussion, those were great, but I also found it was, you know, that might have been a quarter of the time if I'm being generous. So I definitely, I definitely felt a lot of just kind of like this crushing, like all of my time is being taken up and not on things that I necessarily enjoy. So it was kind of a trade-off. I, you know, figured I hadn't done this for that long. And I knew that like I wanted to go to Japan. So it was kind of, and I did really enjoy the swim team. That was a really great experience too. So it was kind of, you know, I took the negatives because I really wanted the positives that came along with it.
So fast forward to the end of high school and what you have done between then and now, just to give us a little idea of where you've taken all this.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2011, and I considered going to college. I considered a lot of things. At one point, I was planning on, I decided I wasn't going to go to school, and I was planning on going down to the Florida Keys and learning how to sail. So like, and then that changed too. I was going to go to Hawaii and like become a scuba dive instructor. So there was a lot of things kind of floating around where I knew I wanted to explore and just kind of experience the world in different ways that I hadn't. So I finally had settled on that I was going to do a long backpacking trip. So I spent the year after I graduated working to save up some money. And then I didn't really know where I wanted to go. I had a few different options. I thought about doing India. I thought about doing Southeast Asia. And Central America was the other one kind of on my list. So I worked the year, and then I would say probably spring of 2012 is when I narrowed in on Central America. And that was honestly kind of an arbitrary decision out of my pool, just because I it was the closest and cheapest plane ticket. I didn't really want to go to Southeast Asia, but the ticket was, I think at the time, like $1,300 from Alaska, or just something really high. And I could get to Central America I flew out of Arizona for like $300. So it was just a matter of, well, how far is my money going to go? So I made the decision to do this backpacking trip, and I was 19 at the time. I'm not sure why, I can't remember the motivation behind going for so long, but I was just like, I want to do this really long backpacking trip. And I would tell people about it. And that's something else. In the United States, I think in general, we don't have a huge travel culture. People like to vacation, I think, but they don't necessarily like to do these long, like, experiential trips.
Yeah, yeah, not in the way that people from England or Australia might more typically do that.
Right, yeah, that's really what I've found. So, I was telling people about this, and like, you're crazy, wow. You know, some people said it was really cool. Some people were like, you're going to die, kind of a thing. I was just like, I'm fine, I'll be fine.
Proved them wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I got back and some people were like, I was wrong. I was like, yeah, it was fun. It was actually wonderful. I chose to do this trip. I flew down to, I was like in Washington, and I was in California for an unschooling conference. Actually saw a friend in Arizona and then left from there. I was gone for 9 months total from home, 7 in Central America, which seems crazy now that I kind of look back, even though it was only a few years ago.
That's a really long trip for somebody who's 19. Yeah. Like that's really impressive.
Yeah. And I turned 20, I think, right before I left Central America. But yeah, but as at the point I decided to do it, I was 19. It was great. Definitely challenging. I found going into like month 3, 4, you definitely start to get homesick. And I kind of decided like at the time, like, I don't know if I'm going to do a trip this long again, but I was dedicated to like finishing out what I'd started and doing it.
And where did your path go from Central America to bring you to where you are now in Asia?
Yeah, so one of my biggest takeaways from that trip, and I think this is kind of the same case for anyone coming from the developed first world going to a third world developing country, is just it's almost impossible to go away not having a really deep appreciation for the opportunity that you have. I did a Spanish immersion school when I was in Guatemala for about a month. So I lived at a homestay, I had like private Spanish lessons during the days. Just getting that opportunity to live with a family and kind of see their daily lives, get to know their situation a little more. I was told stories about, this one family I lived with, it was the parents, the daughter, and then the grandma, and, the grandma had a son that she hadn't seen in 25 years because he left to come to the U.S. to work. She just hadn't seen her son in over 20 years. And I think they'd like Skyped for the first time. So that was the first time she saw his face. I think it was like 15 to 20 years. So just hearing stories like that, and then seeing the struggle that they go through every day. And these are like, I would say middle class families in Guatemala, but still like, you know, struggling to make it, you know, putting their girls through college, even though they don't have any money. And then also having like, you know, health issues. Like while I was there, my host mom had, she had high blood pressure and had like a blood pressure attack and was like freaking out and crying. And we were all kind of there, like in the room, you know, just like being with her. And so, I don't know, it was just like, it was very, you know, you get your privilege checked for sure. And just coming out of that experience, I first of all had, I've always been very into film and documentaries, and just having that experience of being in a country and wanting to like share that, I kind of had to narrow in on, you know, maybe what I wanted to do long term, which would be documentary filmmaking, and then also just a new appreciation for what I had, and you know, trying to seize the opportunity back home. So after the trip, I went home and I had no money left. Like I think I had $200 or $300 in my bank account when I actually got home. So I worked for another year about, and then I made the decision that I was moving to California. It was just time to leave Alaska. It's
goodbye, Alaska.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a beautiful place, but there, you know, and like, I totally understand why people, want to live there. And it's definitely a more free way of life just because there are so few people and so much nature. And, but yeah, it was time for me to go. There's not a lot of opportunity for the things that I wanted to do. And just the community up there as a whole, I don't think I really jive with. But yeah, so I narrowed in on California. I wanted to basically do, you know, a complete 180, go somewhere warm that has beaches and live in a big city. So, and then also
Los Angeles, here we
Los
come.
Angeles. Yeah, and then with my whole interest in documentary filmmaking, I didn't really have a plan, but I was just like, that's where I'm going to go. That's what I'm going to do. So, yeah. So I went there. I lived there for about 6 months or so. I ended up kind of taking a side road and going to Arizona, and I lived in Tucson, Arizona for 7 months. And then I found myself back there in, around LA, and I worked for a little bit before this trip, and now I am in Southeast Asia.
The travel bug could not leave you alone for very
long. Yeah. No, always on the move.
And how long is this current trip?
So this current trip is almost 4 months. So we about a week short of 4 months.
Got it.
Yeah.
And just one more thing before we wrap up. You and I were talking about how you are approaching getting a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree. And I thought it was a really interesting method that you're taking. So just tell us really quickly. You said you needed to get a degree to get a teaching English as a second language certification or have a really good opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I wanted to do, and it's still definitely an interest of mine to teach English abroad. So I was planning on doing it, and I was just looking at different, opportunities, and a lot of them, to get kind of the best placements or make the best salaries. They wanted at least like an associate's degree. So I was kind of like looking at my options there. Cause I had at that point, and it will still had no college credits or anything. So I was looking at, I found a blog, I think, that kind of outlined like if you want to get a degree, and actually I think I Googled like how to get a degree in like less than a year or something to see if it was even hot, like a thing that people did. And I found there was actually this whole community of people essentially testing out of college degrees. And there's a few different schools that you can do this through. The one that I chose was called Thomas Edison State College at the time. At this point, it's been upgraded to a university status. So they kind of are geared. They have a brick and mortar campus, but they're geared towards adult education. Basically, working people who don't necessarily have the time to, you know, invest in going back to school, but who want a complete degree. So they offer classes online, they offer tests. But the one thing that kind of puts them apart from most schools is that they accept an unlimited amount of transfer credits. So basically you can go through them and you can transfer CLEP courses, which is kind of, you know, the college
Level examination preparation, something like
that. Anyways,
Google that.
Yeah.
So CLEP. Like,
exactly. Yeah. They're lower. They basically allow you to test out of lower level courses. And there's a couple other different types of tests that count towards credits. And then the university themselves, they have their own set of tests. They call TSEPs. So if you take, for example, for an associate's degree, if you take four of their TSEP tests, then you don't have to pay tuition. That counts as your tuition. And then once you have met your, you know, your requirements for whatever degree you're getting, you just apply for graduation. And
so it's completely results-based program. You can just study on your own time, self-paced. If you want to cram the stuff in, you can. And then you take the test. And if you pass the test, enough of the tests, then you get a degree.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of the way that I kind of described it is sort of, I don't want to say like a hack, but it's sort of like a, I don't think most people would completely entirely test out of a degree, but just based on the way that they structure their rules, it is possible. So yeah, you could even take classes if you wanted to. Through them online. You could also, if you took a college class, you know, at a community college or wherever it was and you have credits kind of scattered around, you can send them all there. So they just make it really easy for people as easy as possible for people who want to get a degree but don't have the time. So yeah, it was very cool. I'm glad that I found it.
Yeah, especially people who are too busy traveling the world like yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
To go sit in some more classrooms.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Kevin, this has been a great discussion. We got a chance to talk about a lot more than just going back to high school.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, think you're on a totally exciting path.
Oh,
so
thanks for talking with me. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is great.
If you enjoyed this ad-free podcast, there are many ways you can support it. You can write a review on iTunes. You can share it on social media. You can email it to someone who might benefit from it. Or you can support it directly with a per-episode donation at offtraillearning.com/support.